Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Enablement Evolved. I am very happy to get today's guest on. To say that we've tried and failed to get this recorded a few times would be an understatement, but this is someone that I have learned massive amounts from in my time in enablement. I think the first time that I met this person was when I was a part of the Sales Enablement Collective Leaders Fellowship, and she was a tutor on there. You're also an ambassador for the SEC as well. I'm very happy to welcome Del Nakai. How are you, Del?
I'm great. How are you, Karen?
I am excellent. It's a nice Friday afternoon for me. It's Friday morning for you.
So it is Friday morning.
I'm at the fun part of my Friday. You're just getting started on yours.
So Friday is Friday. Slightly. It's all good. Even early in the morning, you have something to look forward to, the weekend, right?
Agreed. So just to start us off, obviously lots of people might be familiar with you through lots of your work, through lots of different places online, through LinkedIn and stuff like that. But do you mind giving us a sort of 30-second or 60-second elevator pitch on who is Del Nakai and the sort of position you hold right now within enablement?
Sure. So I'm currently the Senior Director of Global Go-to-Market Strategy, Operations and Enablement with MariaDB. Try saying that 5 times fast. And I've really spent like the last 12 years probably in growing organizations, driving revenue growth, and even before enablement was enablement, focusing on really building out the skills and driving revenue growth at different organizations, different company sizes, both B2C and B2B as well.
Amazing. And I'm really excited about today's topic because not only is it something that I'm exceptionally passionate about, I know it is something that you're exceptionally passionate about as well. And we're going to sort of split it up into two elements. But the first sort of thing we want to talk about is leadership development. And obviously, ironically, you and I met on a leadership course with you being the tutor and me actually trying to learn a little bit more about it. But I suppose the first place to start is, what makes you so passionate about leadership development?
Yeah, there's a couple things really. So the first is I've fallen flat on my face as a leader multiple times. The thing is that, and there are studies that demonstrate this, typically we enter like leadership roles around the age of 30. I think right now it's probably lowering that age that we first start in leadership roles, but the average age that we actually get into any kind of leadership training is around 40 to 43. Which is insane. And that explains a lot of us having that experience with poor bosses, right? I've been there. I've struggled. I've done things that I probably shouldn't have as a leader, but I didn't have a handbook. Most of us don't get a handbook, you know, going into a leadership role. But I also know how impactful it can be if you're really effective as a leader for your team, the kind of environment you're able to create, the kind of success you're able to create with your team. From a revenue enablement perspective, how important that is for our revenue leaders to have the skills necessary to support their teams, to coach their teams. So absolutely, really critical skill that we definitely need to develop in our leaders.
Agreed. And the reason that I'm so passionate about it is very, very similar, because I was in sales leadership previously. I got my first sales leadership position at 22 years old, which is just purely because of the way that sales works, right? It's very meritocratic in terms of, I was a top performer. They needed someone to step up and lead the team. You know, the old adage is whoever's the best on the leaderboard, that's obviously the best manager in theory, which doesn't work out that way. And I can tell you, I had absolutely no business whatsoever running any sort of team. None at all. Because the thing is, being a leader, whether it's a frontline manager or the further you go up, it's such a specialist and nuanced position, right? Where you need so many different skills. You think, oh, if you're a top performing salesperson or a top performing enablement person, you must be good at communicating. Yeah, but that's fine. But it's a very different type of communication. It's a very different type of, when you're leading people, and I use the word lead because that's what, rather than manage, because obviously we have quite a big dichotomy between those two definitions, or potentially we do. But no one really prepares you, right, for the everyday, the babysitting sometimes, the emotional side, the how do you motivate people, how do you motivate different types of people. It's really, really nuanced. And I think I would say that I'm in the minority in that I've actually been on two leadership development, but outside the SEC, before I got into enablement, I must be like a 1%er if I'd be lucky enough to be on two leadership courses. Because most people get none, like you say, most people get none. Yeah. So From an enablement point of view, then, Dil, we often talk about reps. We often talk about AEs, SDRs, stuff like that. Why do you think that frontline managers or leaders seem to normally be at the bottom of the list for enablement priorities?
I think it's probably just there's so much to do. You know, you go into an organization, whether there's an established enablement function or not, you usually come into a lot of different needs. And it's a matter of trying to figure out, okay, where am I going to have the most impact? And usually the focus of the revenue leaders is their team members, right? So they want that dedication, that focus to go to their team, the sellers, sales engineers, CSMs, account managers, whatever roles you actually support. That's who the revenue leaders up to the CRO, who they want us to really be focusing on. But, you know, as you look at your enablement strategy, as you look at how you really scale your efforts, you start to realize the importance of the revenue leader's role in that, in really having the impact that you're after. So then it becomes like, okay, so what do I need to do now with our revenue leader? So I think that's probably the biggest challenge that I see.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one, right? It's almost a chicken and egg type situation, right? Where you know that if you have good leaders, they're automatically going to be a force multiplier for lots of different things, for performance, being enablement champions, all these little things. But maybe this is my opinion. Please tell me if you think I'm wrong. But potentially, if you were to start with the leaders, do you feel like it might take longer to see the fruits of that labor? Because then you've got to then enable the leaders, and then you've got to wait for them to coach and up the team. And because obviously we're all under a lot of pressure in enablement, do you think it's a bit more of a quote-unquote quick fix to work with reps?
It's possibly a little bit of that, but as you know, with any kind of enablement, there's a mindset gap usually, and there's a skill set gap. Yeah. So to your point earlier, when it comes to sales leadership, a lot of them were former sellers, and they were really successful. So a lot of the leaders that I've worked with feel like they know how to be effective in their role. And I think we all take for granted a little bit that leadership is not just being able to do the same job your team does effectively. It goes beyond that to your earlier comments, right? So I think sometimes the challenge is sales leaders may not have the self-reflection that you just had around, hey, there's things that I need to know, I need to learn, I need to develop in. And we take that for granted sometimes. So I think it's a little bit more challenging because you have to get them to a place where they can take ownership of that and be open to that enablement, that coaching that you want to provide for them.
Yeah, I really like that take. And it's interesting, when I was speaking to Matt Charlesy on a previous episode, one of the things we were talking about is within enablement, we're really good at saying to peers, I don't know the answer to that, or can I get some help with that? I find that that's a lot less common in sales, right? It's almost like as a sales leader, you're almost judged if you don't have the answer.
Right.
Or you've got to be careful who you open up to about your vulnerabilities or about your skills gap, because you're supposed to know the answer. You're supposed to be this big sort of Jordan Belfort, Wolf of Wall Street type leader in a lot of these cases. And that's still the sort of archetypal stereotype. And within sales, we're not really, with regards to sales leaders, I've seen lots of, myself included, when I was in that seat, be like, I don't really want to. Yeah, that's why you see things like Pavilion and stuff like that. They're really on the rise, because people will go there, it'd be a little bit more anonymous, whereas internally, and again, taking, in my experience, sales leaders taking advice, quote unquote advice, stroke coaching, whatever you want to call it, from an enablement person, that's a tough relationship to build, I would say. Would you agree with that in terms of being an enabler going to give advice to a VP or a sales leader? How have you sort of managed that conversation?
Yeah, and I think it's important to have the right rapport, the right relationship and trust with the leaders to be able to get to that point. The other thing I wanted to point out is right now is a really tough time for a lot of leaders. I've heard people in our space even say that right now the leader's role is even more difficult than an SDR or BDR role, which is typically the most challenging. They get no's all the time. They have to have a lot of grit to do their roles. But with all of the pressure with the current economic climate that we're in, this is something that a phrase Corey Bray brought up in one of his podcasts is super closers. So managers, leaders are being asked to be super closers, being part of every opportunity. So we don't lose a single dollar. We don't lose a single opportunity. So that's another challenge right now is like, how do we pull them away from that, away from managing their team to enable them to be more effective in their roles? Are they in the right mindset to be able to do that? Is it the right timing to be able to do that? So I certainly think that's another challenge. But I do think having that relationship, that rapport, and being on the same page about what are we trying to accomplish? Why is this important to you? And how is this going to help you help your team? They have to have that understanding and alignment for it to be even remotely a possibility for an area of focus for us as enablers, right?
Yeah, no, I like that. And I'm a big fan of Corey Bray's work as well. And interesting, you mentioned super closers. We went at my previous company, probably Q4 of last year, especially Q1 of this year. That's exactly what the managers were asked to do. They were asked to be on every single discovery call, every single follow-up call. And the thing is, when you look at the justification from the senior leadership, you understand why.
Yeah.
But also as an enablement person who often looks at it from the bigger picture, you often it's easy to get frustrated with that and be like, do you know, if you rather than spending 45 minutes on this call, if you spent 45 minutes listening to five different calls, you'd actually, your return on investment of that time is going to be better. Right. But it's a really difficult argument to choose, like to put up there, right? Because what happens if the sales leader wasn't on that call and then the salesperson flounders and then the deal doesn't get, you know, there's no opportunity created or whatever it is. So I get that it's a tough argument and there's probably no right answer.
Yeah.
Right? Where for every five leaders who would better spend the time listening to calls, there's probably five other actual super closers who go and close that deal. So it's probably not much in it. So I suppose to move from that, that's probably a good segue from like the super closer mentality. Lots of leaders, you know, the stereotype is spreadsheet coach, super closers, going in there and being the hero of the show. If we were to take a step back from your point of view, from an enablement point of view, and you were putting together a leadership development program for frontline managers, I mean, what would that look like? And what sort of topics would you cover?
Yeah, so to your points earlier, there are two focus areas for leadership enablement. There's actually being a leader and a revenue leader in particular, and then there's purely management skills. So one of the things that I think is really key is having a competency map built out for your leaders and understanding where each of your different leaders are, because with any training, there's no one-size-fits-all approach, but especially with revenue leaders, you can't do like really basic training for a revenue leader who's been doing what they've been doing for like 20, 30 years. It just doesn't work. They'll shut down. They won't listen. They won't participate, and they won't really benefit from it either. So we want to be really mindful about what we're focusing on in those two areas, depending on the tenure of their leadership experience. So then it becomes, if you do have more senior leaders, some of the focal areas might be motivating, encouraging their team members, and you might focus a little bit more on the revenue leadership side than purely management skills. For newer managers, and we recently had about 8 months ago, three of our sellers, CSM, sales engineers, actually be promoted to a leadership role for their very first time. So no previous management experience. And what I did with them is I actually curated really basic management skills. So how do you run a one-on-one? How do you have some of those difficult conversations? How do you do reviews? How do you handle questions around salary increases? All of that really basic stuff. So you want to be able to distinguish what is most important, but then you start to focus on how am I going to actually be able to have these revenue leaders be force multipliers? What are the things that we need them to be coaching their team on, and how does that align to our overall initiatives to support the revenue org, the customer facing team members, so that there's a complementary enablement for the revenue leaders to be able to reinforce and coach to that. And then the other thing we can dig into is around coaching. So I'm sure we'll get to that too.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you split by sort of soft skills and leadership skills and stuff like that. One of the things that I've seen be a missing piece, both in my anecdotal experience of going through things and then also other programs I've seen or tried to develop. Maybe it's a miss, or maybe it's just, I'm a big believer in leadership styles, and everyone has their own style. Same, I'm a big believer in sales styles. I love a framework. I absolutely love a framework, but I believe the secret sauce is when you have a framework, times consistency, times sprinkling your own personality or your own style over the top of it. I think that's what's made the secret sauce. Do you think we give enough time in your experience to helping leaders develop their own leadership style, or do we just expect them to fit into the leadership style of the company?
That's a really interesting question. I think generally speaking, that is something that is hard for us to help support, because you really have to be involved in those team meetings, involved in even one-on-one conversations to understand how they're managing, to be able to make sure that they are making it more personal to what they're comfortable with. There is no like one size fits all, again, approach that works for every single leader. So to get to that point, you need a little bit more visibility to be able to do that. I do agree with what your sentiment is, that a lot of times there are specific frameworks. This is what you do. This is how you do it. But it doesn't go that last final step. And maybe that's just comes from experience. But I've never gone to the point of like going that in depth outside of conversations around how they're actually applying those skills. So with the three leaders that I mentioned, we have biweekly sessions that we go over how they're actually applying what they're learning to their team, what's currently happening, what's top of mind. And that kind of touches on the style a little bit. And some people are very direct. So how do you take that direct approach and how do you make it work with your team and also with the different people on your team? Because not everyone's going to be receptive to that style. So you can start to touch on that, but it has to be more individualized.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think my way of approaching it in the past is just because, like you say, certainly where I've worked, I've never had a position of a leadership enablement person where it's just purely, which is probably what you need to really dig into that. You probably need someone who's super experienced, probably almost trained as a sort of ICF accredited coach or something like that to be able to work with leaders, almost like an internal executive coach type situation where very few enablement teams will have access to that, right? I think the only way that I've tried to sort of look at that or help managers with that is almost like just give them literature and be like, which one do you think you are, right? And then from there, based on their own anecdotal thoughts, you then go, okay, well, if you're this sort of leader, how would you execute on this, exactly like you say, on this problem? But I think that's the bit for me, because again, my big thing, and I did a session with the SEC on this, I think with leadership coaching, we always talk about the what in terms of what we should be coaching. We always talk about why. We always give lots of fantastic, you know, stats around, you know, for every dollar spent on coaching, you get a $7.50 return on investment or, you know, X amount of percentage increase of quota attainment, but very rarely do we give the how and you know, around how do we coach, how do we talk, how do we communicate. And I found that I've been on courses where my company's paid probably hundreds of thousands of pounds, right? And even then it was, what are we doing, why are we doing it? But again, you would just get all this literature and you go back to your job and be like, I don't know how to implement this,
right?
And I think that seems to be, and you've got that in yours, right, where you're talking about frameworks, how to run a one-to-one, and that seems like a basic skill, but it actually is really, really important, right?
It is. I guess I never think of it as separate, because anything that I do, I focus on the application and the how. So that has to be integrated into whatever we do, because even with sellers, and I know we're talking about revenue leaders, but even with sellers, when you're trying to have them pick up new messaging, we can't just have them memorize a script. They have to make it their own. They have to apply it. They have to practice and figure out what works for them and their customers. So I think that application piece, when you're able to have more of these coaching sessions, when you're doing any kind of leadership enablement, have them tie it back to their actual experiences, that will start to get into more of the stylistic pieces and how they're applying what they're learning.
Great, love that. And I'm going to ask you two final questions on leadership development before we move on to the sort of semi-related project. Just, I'm going to give you a spicy question just to put you on the spot. And you'll either win fans of sales leaders or you won't, but in your opinion, how much, or as a percentage, how much time should a frontline manager, revenue leader spend on coaching their team?
I think to some of the point of the conversation we've had so far, there's no like straightforward answer to that. I think the more you can invest in coaching, the more you can invest in your team, the more you see that ROI in your efforts. Because ultimately you work through your people, you don't work in their place. You try not to lead from the front, with the exception of what we're all experiencing, which is the super closer ask they're getting from their leaders, right? So I think it's important to have them figure out, how do I integrate this into my workflow? I think that's actually one of the biggest challenges that I see for leaders is saying, I don't have time to coach. When am I supposed to be coaching? And they think of it as this like long thing. You have to sit down for an hour with one single person and do this like rigorous coaching, but you can actually do it in a way that it's a little bit more informal at times. Even if you're communicating via Slack or Teams or whatever system you use internally, you can use that as a coaching opportunity. And coaching essentially is helping people come to that answer, that understanding, taking ownership themselves of that solution, not telling them what to do. So it does take a little bit more time because you're not just saying, go do this, but it doesn't have to be this arduous thing. Then it's like, I have to dedicate all of these hours to be able to do it.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It's often seen coaching as this sort of esoteric event that has to be calculated, right? And you've got to genuinely move someone to tears by the end of your coaching. So it doesn't need to be like that, right? Sometimes it's just asking, what would you do? Right? What do you think you would do? Or right? And then that's it. We've all been in that situation personally or professionally where as soon as someone lets you get out what's in your brain, you actually go, oh, yeah, I know the answer, right? That's still coaching. So my last question on this before we sort of move on is, we have lots of people who listen who are sales enablement leaders or revenue enablement leaders, or either that they would like to be a leader. What would you say your top, if let's move sort of sideways from revenue leaders to enablement leaders. If you were to create a course for revenue enablement leaders, and you're one yourself, what would you say the sort of top three or top five skills or competencies you would need in a sales enablement leadership development course?
That's a great question. So I would say the first thing is being able to be very strategic. And that also is kind of an esoteric word. So what that means is that you don't purely focus on the tactical. You don't just go to all the hand raisers who say, we need this kind of training and deliver on it. You want to be mindful of the corporate goals, the corporate KPIs, and how you can scale you and your team's efforts to be able to accomplish those. So being strategic, I would say, is definitely one of them. Being agile is another. So I'm sure you've experienced a ton of this, both in your sales leadership roles and your enablement roles, which is nothing happens exactly according to plan. So we have to be able to be flexible and adapt to what is happening in the moment. And it couldn't be more true than in our current economic climate, right? So we have to be able to adapt and be agile and adjust our plans, because the other thing you need to do as a strategic leader is build out a charter. One thing I'm recommending more recently is build it out quarter by quarter, given the fact that there's a lot of change happening right now. You don't want to plan out the entire year and have to change it every single quarter anyway. So I think that's definitely another one. And being able to lead through influence is probably the biggest thing, because oftentimes we don't have a lot of authority in what we're trying to accomplish. And because we're such a cross-functional role, we need to be able to build those relationships and lead through influence. So that would be probably the top three skills that I would say we would need as enablement leaders.
Love that. I think that's great.
What do you think?
I'm very, very similar. I think the influential piece is probably the number one. And when I was at the SEC event last December, that was like the biggest shock to my system.
Yeah.
Right, is influence with authority, because I was used to be a sales leader, so I was just, if I said something, people would have to do it, right? So now I go and speak to these people, and they'd be like, the people who were in my seat, and I'd be like, well, and they'd be like, well, no, like, I don't agree. Yeah. And that's fine, but then even if they did agree, nothing would ever happen. Right. Yeah, I think a big, for me, a big understanding between strategic and operational enablement, I think is, and we always hear those words, doing more with less, we always hear those words, cost center, What do those mean? How are you? Which are you judged by? I think Kunal Pandya, we did a round table in Manchester probably about 3 months ago. And he made a really good point: is does your CFO know what the enablement team does?
Yeah.
Right, because that's really the only person that matters, right? So can they define it? Because if someone else goes, oh, they just do the training and onboarding. Oh, that's not quite the definition that we want, right? Yeah. So again, it's understanding how to define. So I think strategic versus operational, communicating with influence. I think I don't even know the real word for this. It's similar to what you mentioned, but around not being an order taker.
Yeah.
You know, like I suppose it's boundary setting. I suppose it's probably the closest thing I can get to. Especially the bigger the company you work for, the more loud voices you're going to get, the more hand raisers, as you called it. And then I think outside of that is understanding the enablement maturity model. I think is a big one.
Yeah. Right?
Because if you don't understand where you're trying to get your team to or your department to, you're probably going to be stuck in a little bit of jogging on the spot, running on the spot type situation. And probably this goes without saying, but probably prioritization, right? Like I think we all need to be able to work on prioritization across the board. But no, as I said, you and I first met on the Sales Enablement Collective when I was doing the Leaders Fellowship there.
Yeah.
So that put together a few things. There's some really good group of topics there. I probably couldn't think of any more other than like basic day-to-day.
Yeah.
Sort of things. Other things like again, leadership styles, like sort of like in the middle, like leadership styles.
Yeah.
I found it going for. I was promoted really quickly,
mm-hmm.
which was great. But also, I'd led a different type of team in the past to an enablement team. So you know you're very project based. And again, when you're allowed to just go fully tunnel vision on a project, compared to taking a step up and having to manage or understand multiple projects. I suppose that's just like superior project management skills, I suppose, but probably that.
And so I did think of one more that I'm sure you'll agree on and our audience will agree on as well, which is being data driven. So there's so much talk around ROI metrics and being able to prove the impact and value of enablement. I don't really go the ROI route because there are so many factors and we can correlate, not cause these lagging indicators to move. But being able to be data driven to the point where we're bringing insights to our executives and saying, this is what we're observing. This is what the data shows. This is how we can address it. That mm-hmm. is really important to being more strategic. So I did want to also call that out.
No, I think that's great. And also the thing is what data matters, right? Like every company's got so much data now, but which one matters, which one can you affect, which one can you influence, which one do you want to talk about?
Absolutely.
Right? Like it's just being able to decipher that is super important, right?
Yeah.
No, I think that's great. I think we've just solved all enablement problems just right there. Just we'll create that course and we'll sell
it. I wish it was that easy.
No, right. So moving on to a sort of semi-related topic, which is change management. And this is something I've learned a lot from yourself and just in through other podcasts and your stuff online, because it's something I very, very much believe in, but I've just never structured the way that you've structured it. I'll put the thought process in it. I know it's important, but I've never really like put a framework around it. So from the words of an expert like yourself, Del, what is change management within enablement? Why is it important to enablement professionals? And then we can maybe towards the end, we can give us an overview of some of the sort of frameworks that you've used or seen work in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm still learning. I appreciate the expert title, but even with change management, even having a framework in place, nothing again goes according to plan. So being able to figure out how you can adapt and adjust to the needs of the business, I think is key. So for me, it all comes down to your overall enablement strategy and being able to scale the work that your team does to not actually be a cost center. We're never going to have the scale that a direct frontline sales manager will have to their team in terms of our team to the sellers, for instance. So it just has to go through that partnership with our revenue leaders for us to actually have the impact we need to. So it's essential to our strategy that they do what we need from them to help us manage and initiate and sustain the change to drive the impact that we're after. So I think that's really what it comes down to is if you want to accomplish anything in enablement, you have to have the revenue leaders involved. They have to be holding their teams accountable, coaching, reinforcing, all of that stuff. So I try to communicate it as essential to our strategy. And you're not alone in what you expressed in terms of you trying to figure out how to integrate it, because a lot of our enablement community is still trying to figure this out, which is why I talk about the topic so much as well, to bring awareness to it.
No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think it's so important, both from an understanding. Again, I think we get hyper fixated on the reps, right? And we focus on like the rep adoption and stuff like that. But we often miss out the importance of the sales leaders in that change management. What are they using the same language as us? Do they appear to their team, at least, to be as motivated as us enablers in getting these things done?
Yeah.
I think I saw a stat, but I heard you with a stat previously with where it was like X percentage of projects fail without frontline managers and stuff like that involved. What do you have that stat off the top of your head? Because it was pretty scary, to be honest.
It is. So 70% of initiatives fail when there's no change management or it's not followed through with effectively. And that's based on research by John Cotter. With ProSci's ADCAR model, I've heard it be as high as 85%. So it's really, really important. And the reason, again, I emphasize it is there's so much talk around metrics that we can't move the needle on those metrics if we don't manage the change effectively. So that comes first. You need to identify your competency maps. You need to identify leading behaviors that indicate success and influence those lagging indicators. But you have to be able to manage the change effectively to actually see the numbers move.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think, do you think that is why a lot of, by not having a robust thought process or a robust framework that we use as enablement professionals when rolling out whatever it may be, new tool, new messaging, whatever it may be. Do you feel like that's why a lot of enablement professionals maybe feel a little bit frustrated when they don't get the adoption that they want, because maybe they've skipped over that frontline manager part of the change management?
I think purely for all of us, even revenue leaders included, when we don't see the numbers move, when we don't see the impact that we're after, because we're focusing on training, not managing the people side of change, then it's frustrating for all of us. And that's what leads to enablers being in a situation where they might be seen as a cost center, that their revenue leaders don't have as much faith in what they can accomplish, even though revenue leaders actually have to take responsibility as well to help manage and drive that change. So I think it definitely does impact us in a way that we get frustrated. I've experienced it. And that's frankly why I'm so passionate about talking about change management, is I've tried to drive change without it. And then I started to educate myself on what does it really take to drive human behavior change. And it's a lot of work. It's, you know, people are complex. We have status quo biases. We're comfortable where we are. We don't want to necessarily make a change. And in the absence of getting to that point where we're building this new habit, we revert back to what we're comfortable with. So there's all of these things that we are dealing with and all of these challenges. So we want to be able to address that. And I'm happy to dig into the framework that I use.
Perfect. Well, yeah, if you wouldn't mind talking us through the framework that you use and maybe some others, just even just by acronym, that people might be able to go and search to see if there's one that suits their way of working.
Sure. So the one that I currently use is called ADCAR. It stands for Awareness, Desire, Knowledge, Ability, and Reinforcement. So typically we jump straight into that knowledge section, which is the initial enablement, the initial information session. When people ask us for some sort of training, that is often the first place they one ask us to start, or two, we start because we don't think about how we're managing that change as effectively as we could. The awareness piece is really important. Simon Sinek said it best, you got to start with why, helping people understand why are we doing this? Why are we doing this now? And importantly, what's in it for you? So that desire piece has to come with it, because otherwise you're going to get pushback. People are going to, you know, wonder, how is this going to impact me, my ability to perform, achieve my targets? So we want to make sure that people understand the benefit to them, so they want to make that change. Whether you're a kid, you're an adult, doesn't matter what age you are, you don't like being told what to do. And it's no different for our revenue organization. So we want to make sure that they get to the point that they see the benefit to themselves. So those are the first two steps we really need to take before the knowledge building. Ability is is really tied to coaching and reinforcement. So building that skill over time to the point of mastery and then reinforcing it so you don't just have it be a single point in time that never works. How do you keep this as a habitual practice that they are adopting and reinforcing to make sure that that change is also sustained? So that's currently the model I use. There's also Cotter's 8-step theory or model that you can use. There's Lewin's model for change. There's probably a dozen different ones that in our community people are familiar with. I recently actually put out a poll to our community to see how many people are using those top two that I mentioned or actually using any kind of change management framework. And there's some conversation around pulling in pieces of different frameworks to make it work for your needs. I think that's great, but I would say start simple as much as possible before you try to get it a little bit more comprehensive and intensive to meet the needs of the business as well.
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, I think it's very similar to what people do with like sales methodology,
exactly.
Like chop and change pieces. However, it's good to start with something and follow it through to see if it actually works for you, right? Like before you start adding bits to it. I really like that. Again, I'm going to put you on the spot on a scale. Let me be honest first and foremost. I think this isn't an acronym. It just is what it is. I think my strategy for change management up to this point has been hope. that's not an acronym. It's just I hope that everyone does it. So again, it's the best laid plans, and I think it's maybe just because it hasn't been overly structured sometimes, right? And I haven't maybe gone through a framework where you go, I think I've ticked all the boxes, but because I'm not following a framework, maybe you've missed out something fundamental that you didn't realize, right? Because you're not following a framework. So I'm certainly going to check these frameworks out. But my on the spot question is, as a skill for an enablement professional on a scale of 1 to 10. How important do you believe it is, that change management is, as a skill that an enabler should have?
15, way off the charts. And I say that because it's more the awareness piece of like, community, we need to be doing this. We need to be integrating some sort of framework into our overall enablement strategies. We need to also educate our revenue leaders on what it is, to your point, to speak that common language around what it takes to drive that change. So they're not just looking at us to achieve the outcomes that they're looking for. They have an equal, if not higher, bigger part in driving and sustaining the change. And I typically break it down into they're the champions for their team, they're the coaches, and they're the managers who drive, accountability with their team. So they do have a very active role. We can't just keep the change management framework within our team.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the biggest takeaway when I've heard you talk about this in the past is we can have as many frameworks in enablement, change management or otherwise, but we need to include that collaboration between other parts. Otherwise, it's just it's quite literally the opposite of everyone singing from the same hymn sheet, right? Where we're just doing our thing and we expect anything is quite a lot of the time we have that expectation, right? Or we assume that they are as passionate, or we assume that they are going to follow through like we do. And again, quite often in my anecdotal experience, we tell them why, or we tell them what, but we don't show them how. What framework are we using? How do you execute this from a frontline manager's point of view? Perfect. Well, I suppose to wrap us up, I always like to try ask all of our guests for one practical and one tactical tip. And I know you've given us a massive amount thus far. But if you were to, as a practical takeaway tip for today, something that any enablement person listening to today around leadership development or change management, what would your practical tip be?
Yeah, I would say for leadership enablement, figure out the needs of your leaders. Make sure you distinguish, what level they are currently at, and start to either curate or build out enablement to support your leaders in driving change with you. And then the other side of that in terms of change management is identify a framework that works for you and integrate it into how you run your initiative. So whatever project management model you have, whatever way that you drive initiatives forward, figure out how you can integrate that, pulling your leaders into the mix as well. And one thing I just want to put a plug out there for is I'm actually actively working with the SEC on a change management course for our enablement community. That's a couple months out, but I'm hopeful that that will continue to build awareness within our community about the importance of it.
Oh, I mean, that sounds great. I mean, I'm sure lots of people will be interested. And taking a step back on the tactical side, if you were to, something that you can give our enablement audience as maybe like a bigger picture or a tactical strategic sort of tip that they could think about going forward, what would that be?
I think building awareness and educating your executives, your stakeholders on the importance of change management. Oftentimes we are involved in really strategic corporate initiatives and we help connect the dots across the company in a very cross-functional effort. So being able to drive that education internally and having that common language and making sure that people understand how long does it actually take and what does it actually take to achieve the outcomes they're after. So the expectations are not unrealistic of either the customer-facing organization or your enablement team.
Wonderful. Well, Del, you obviously just dropped us a world exclusive in the change management course that's coming up with the Sales Enablement Collective. But ahead of that, if anyone wants to connect with you or find ask you some questions or just get in contact with you in general, what's the best place for them to do that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Please reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect. And oftentimes I learn just as much from other members of our community as I'm hoping to be able to share with them as well. So please do connect with me.
Wonderful. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of Enablement Evolved. Del, thank you so much for your time. Lots of great takeaways for everyone. And I shall see everyone on the next episode.
Thank you so much, Kieran. Great to be with you.